Welcome in to another edition of Half Court Press. I'm John Niatawa, joined by Chris Hetty on the phone this week. We're trying something new. Chris is in Kansas City, probably stuffing his face with barbecue. How are those ribs doing there, Chris?
I actually did have Oklahoma Joe's this afternoon, and it was delightful. I stood in line for about 20 minutes until I realized that you can carry out, and it's much quicker.
Yeah.
So I did that, brought it home. And I'm staying at the in-laws, and the two dogs that are here were incredibly jealous, as I'm sure you probably are.
I feel like I can smell the aroma, and I'm, 300 miles away or however far away Omaha is from KC.
I felt like I could smell it on the way there. I mean, I was ready to go.
Well, glad you got to experience that. We'll talk about the basketball that you're going to see down there here in a bit. But Chris, I have some stats for you. Last week, you began the podcast with some stats and some facts. It's my turn.
okay, yeah, you can have it.
Big Ten related. Here we go. It's just 2 weeks, obviously. It's early. There's so much to be determined to figure out. And, early season narratives don't always work out or extend throughout the entire season. But for the sake of conversation, since that's what we do here on this podcast, the Big Ten through 2 weeks is 45-6. That's the combined record of all the Big Ten teams so far in non-conference play 2 weeks in. The league has wins over arguably the preseason favorite in the Pac-12, Oregon. In my opinion, the top three teams coming into the year in the Big East, so Villanova, Marquette, Providence. The best team in the AAC, Cincinnati. I think UCF was technically picked to win that league, but Cincinnati has the more impressive track record and certainly a program, even though it's lost a lot, you'd expect to contend for an NCAA tournament spot. So they beat Cincinnati, beat a good Davidson team. I mean, it's been a really impressive start. And the other thing I'd like to note, too, about the Big Ten is that, so last year, the league, in addition to having trouble picking up quality wins, had got a lot of bad losses in non-conference. I tallied it up. They had Big Ten teams lost to teams from the Summit League, the Sun Belt, the WAC, the West Coast, the Missouri Valley, the Mountain West, the MAAC, not the MAC, the MAAC, and the America East. So far, man. And this year so far, I know, again, 2 weeks in, but the Big Ten, if you separate, I got it at 11-6 against the major conference teams. So that's the Power Five, including the Big East and the American. So take away those seven conferences, those six other conferences, mid majors and low major conferences. The Big Ten is 34-0. It's been impressive.
Yeah, like I think people were really skeptical of the Big Ten in general because of the way last year went, but no one's missing the tournament this year because of the league. I mean, that's
right,
like, for sure. And I think that you can see, and you're a voter, and we can talk about this a little bit, but you can kind of see that I think the Big Ten in general is like really raising some eyebrows because you've got, Michigan obviously moved way up in the polls. So they're kind of the highest rated. It's Michigan, Michigan State, Iowa is ranked 20th. And I didn't think that Iowa was going to be all that good, but they, beat Oregon pretty good. Ohio State, Purdue, and Wisconsin are 23, 24, 25. And then there's this chunk where like it's 23, 24, 25. Are those three schools. And then the next three schools receiving votes are Nebraska, Indiana, Maryland. Mm. Like there's just this, and we've talked about this a lot of like this middle of the pack Big Ten is like extremely good. And so I wonder what that's going to do down the road. Like if they're just going to feed up on each other when the season actually starts. But I think it's really impressive early on because I think that people didn't think much of the Big Ten and, I don't know. There wasn't really a team like even Michigan State and Michigan. Like I picked them to go 1-2 in the Big Ten in my preseason poll, but I wasn't even like totally bought in on them. Like I thought they'd be better than they were last year, but I didn't like think they'd be great. All of a sudden, this conference is like coming out of nowhere. I feel like, and it's like one of the premier basketball conferences right now. And again, it's November and it's early, but for Nebraska, it's a good thing that Nebraska is as good as they are this year because if they weren't, this would be a really tough conference. To be in, if you were kind of a lower level like Penn State, like this would be really tough.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about Nebraska, but before I do that, I did want to make the point that like I think one of the reasons it does stand out so much is just because of how disappointing the Big Ten's performance was last year at this time. And so there's such a stark difference. And you're right, like the conference probably because of last year, even though the teams that made the NCAA tournament had some success in the NCAA tournament, the rest of the league, there was still just so much unknown about what was going to happen. And those top tier teams lost a lot too. And so because it's so different and the league has been impressive through 2 weeks, or so impressive, like picking off top teams and avoiding bad losses, I think it's really stood out. Now, yeah, like you said too, though, they got to keep it up. I mean, you can't have Penn State losing to Rider again, or Indiana losing to Indiana State, or you know, those types of right. losses will ding the reputation. So if they want to remain at the top, or as one of the top two, I mean, right now it kind of feels like they legitimately will challenge the ACC as the best conference in the country, even without a top tier, like bona fide national title contender. Michigan's had a really strong start to the season, and I got them in the top 10. They're a top 10 team in the AP poll, so like maybe that is the team. But even without a clear cut, oh hey, this is the top dog, man, there's so many good teams. So what do you think?
They might not have a national title contender, I don't think, but they do have like seven teams that can make it to the Elite Eight.
Yeah,
you know. Like they have teams that are like that are really going to cause havoc in March if they play the way they are. Anyway, go ahead.
Well, and that's the other thing I was thinking of too. The coaching in this league is so good. Like that's why last year for me was such a surprise, because and the expectations are so high. So there's like an urgency, and you have like the resources and the talent to maximize what you got on the court. And the league wasn't able to do that. Now it is at least through 2 weeks. Again, we'll see if they can keep it up, but. For Nebraska, is this a good thing? Or like you said, oh, it's a good thing that they actually have a legit team this year, but is it good because we could be in a situation in the middle of February where Nebraska's, you know, stuck in this logjam of teams that are all like 4-4 in the league or something.
Yeah, it's a really good point. It's a good thing in terms of like they're not going to get killed by 20 every single week because they actually have a good team.
Yeah.
But it is a bad thing because like your record could, I mean, Nebraska's record is going to hurt. Like, they're not winning 13 league games this year. If they do, they're winning the conference. And that's like,
right?
That's going to be hard. And so it's going to hurt the record, and you're going to have to really rely on the Big Ten being as strong as it is. And so that's kind of where, and you've seen this in years in past with the Big 12. You know, you usually have like KU, but kind of in the middle of that. And I guess you've seen this in the Big Ten too, of like, you'll have five teams that are like within two or three games of each other, but they just beat up on each other and lose to random teams. Like you just can't really get a grasp of like who's good and who's not really by the end of the year. And so with Nebraska, I think it's just, you got to get a couple wins that really stand out. Like you have to, I don't know, like I'm looking at their schedule right now and they've got a tough stretch where they play, you know, Maryland, Iowa, Penn State, Indiana, and Michigan State. And those are all teams ranked in the top 40 at KenPom. And so, and that's like in a row. And so
yeah.
I think the one thing for Nebraska is like, if you want to stand out, you have to rattle off a couple good wins in a row. You can't just like beat Michigan State and then, you know, I don't know, like just kind of fall off the next game. Like, you know, the next game is Rutgers. So like, obviously you won't want to lose that one, but like, You can't just win and then kind of go away. Like you have to consistently be in the conversation, and that's going to be really hard. But at the same time, you know, we talked about it in terms of like you want to have the conversation of this is a big year for Tim Miles. This is a no excuses year. I mean, the Big Ten is really good. You're not going to not get in the tournament because of the conference. You have as good of a team as you've had in years, so you're not gonna like. There's no way that you can, you know, spin this. And that's kind of the way that Tim wants it of like, you know, I want to prove that I'm, you know, I should be here. So it's a good and a bad thing, I guess, which is kind of a lazy way to answer your question. It's a good thing because you could actually, you know, compete with the top talent and prove that you're worthy. But it's a bad thing because if one guy gets hurt or if for some reason you go into a shooting slump and you just can't rattle off a couple wins, then you can get kind of buried in this conference.
Dude, speaking of the schedule, you mentioned that one stretch at the start that's in January. So it's not the two games that they have in December, but that's tough. Did you see the end? Two at Penn
State. Yeah, the end is horrible.
Right, at Penn State, Purdue at home, at Michigan State, Iowa at home. And Iowa at home on Sunday, no sit Sunday? I mean, is that, can we just mark that down now? Because it kind of feels
maybe.
Like... Maybe. I don't know, it may have to be.
Maybe. Iowa, I mean, might be that good this year. Like, I mean, it sounds like, it looks like they're going to actually, like, play defense.
Yeah.
Big improvement.
Right.
Because they haven't in the past, like, I don't know, 10 years.
Not under Fran.
And the thing is that they're projected to go 2-3 in that span. So that's what I'm saying. Where like you can't fall off. Like that'd be a tough way to end that, because the way that it's projected for KenPom right now, they end the season 2-3 and finish 19-11 in
overall
for the year.
Yeah.
Right. And so then you probably go into the Big Ten tournament, like, I don't know, like maybe a 5 or 6 seed. And that's what I mean, where like you need 1 or 2 wins in the tournament, like in the Big Ten tournament, to actually make the NCAA tournament, you know?
Or to at least feel good about it.
But if you finish strong, like you have the opportunity to beat Michigan and Michigan State back to back. You win those two games, you're in the tournament, like hands down.
Yeah, you might even get like a 4 seed.
Yeah, maybe.
They're both on the road, so that'd be incredible. Anyway, all right, let's focus on the sort of now. We're recording this podcast on a Monday. Nebraska plays in the Hall of Fame Classic today and on Tuesday. So depending on when you're listening to it, you may know some of the results. But still, I think, Chris, you can probably give a pretty good overview of what this tournament means. Nebraska plays Missouri State today, and then we'll face off against either Texas Tech or USC on Tuesday. What's the approach for the Huskers going into this thing?
Yeah, I think, and this isn't anything that anyone has necessarily said, but this is kind of my sense of, you know, you look around college basketball and you've got teams like Villanova losing and you've got Kentucky losing. You just, a lot of teams are kind of trying to find their way. And I think Nebraska is still a little bit underlooked. Like, they're obviously not in the top 25 yet. You put them in year 25, but I think people are still just kind of curious, like, don't want to jump on the bandwagon quite yet. And I think that even though the talent down here in terms of teams isn't, I mean, just jumps out of the screen. I mean, it's USC and Texas Tech and Missouri State. Those aren't necessarily like powerhouses, especially since Texas Tech is kind of rebuilding from last year, even though they were a 3 seed. I think this is still an opportunity for Nebraska to kind of show that they belong. Like, I think if they come in this evening and really put it on Missouri State, and then they compete against what I think it'll probably be Texas Tech, and they beat Texas Tech in Kansas City in a Big 12 town in the Sprint Center and kind of win this mini tournament, I think people would be like, okay, like, I think maybe we need to really take a hard look at this Nebraska team. And I think that that's something that Nebraska probably needs. Like, I think that they have a pretty good sense of who they are as a team. I think that they have been pleasantly surprised with the way the bench has played. But it's been at home. And so, like, not on a Kenton shoot at the Sprint Center in an arena that is much different. I mean, it's not much different than TBA, but like, it's still different. Your depth perception is way off in arena. So like, how does he actually shoot? Brady Hyman, this is the first time he'll be playing outside of the state of Nebraska in college. Like, does he show up? Like, does he play as well as he has in front of his family and friends in Lincoln? You know, can James Palmer figure out how to kind of lead the team a little bit? You know, he kind of was slow at Seton Hall and kind of carried them in the last half of that game. But, you know, can he come in here in a road environment and really basically make a statement of, like, I'm Big Ten Player of the Year? Like, one of those types of performances. So there's a lot on the table, I think, in terms of perception. And I feel like sports writers like to talk about perception a lot. And it's kind of hard to actually quantify. But the way that I view it, you know, if Nebraska comes in here and they win this tournament, I think you'll see they'll start to become kind of a trendy pick from national analysts in terms of, like, I think this team can, and not like in a Andy Katz, like, I like Andy Katz, but he was like super early on the train, like,
yeah,
Nebraska's going to go to the Sweet 16 kind of thing. And everyone was like, well, they haven't played yet, so let's just kind of see. I think if Nebraska wins the tournament down here, I think you'll see people kind of be like, this Nebraska team, I really like them for these reasons. And so it's kind of an opportunity for them, I think, to step out of the shadow and actually announce themselves for college basketball, I think, in terms of, like, hey, we're for real.
And the other thing, too, to remember is, even if Nebraska doesn't do that and doesn't have the statement that it wants to, it's okay. I mean, because it's early. And mm-hmm. It's going to have so many more opportunities, even next month, to prove itself. I mean, next week to prove itself. And so, like, that is the beauty of early season basketball, is you can take a couple hits. Now, you would, in an ideal world, you don't want to, especially with a veteran team, but you can take a hit and still, you know, make a statement sort of later and find your footing later.
Sometimes like you need a loss. Like sometimes you actually need to lose because you need to, like, it's kind of like a heat check where like you win a couple in a row and you get a little lazy, and it's kind of like hitting 4 threes in a row and you take a fifth from like Curry range and like, okay, I airballed it, so I need to like recalibrate. Sometimes you do need a loss. And that's kind of, I don't know if Nebraska's quite there yet. Like I still think that they're kind of moving there. Like they're not like uber confident yet. You know what I mean? And so, like, I think a loss, if they lost to Texas close, that would be like an encouraging loss of like, okay, this works. If they lost to Missouri State, that would be a little worrisome.
Yeah,
you would actually start to worry. Like, you'd be like, well, how good is Seton Hall then? Like, it's kind of become one of those things.
We're already asking that question, though, Chris. Seton Hall lost to St. Louis at home. Although, I think St. Louis is pretty good, but still. Yeah, you don't want to lose at home to St. Louis. But go on.
Right. And you don't want to lose on the road to Missouri State, because then it becomes like, yeesh. So, but you're right. You're completely right. In the end, this is really early. And so, like, Nebraska's not going to lose getting into the NCAA tournament because of what happens here. But I think just from a perception standpoint, they could really make some noise if they play well down here.
You wrote a little bit about Tanner Borchardt, like, finding his role within this, on this team. I mean, obviously those top four guys and really top five with Thomas Allen, like they know what they're, how they fit, and the rest of the guys who are coming in off the bench have to sort of settle in, and Tanner seems to be doing that. I thought he had a pretty good game against Seton Hall, even though, you know, that the stats don't like jump off the page at you, but like I thought he mm-hmm. impacted the game in sort of subtle ways, and like all he has to do really is just like box out, grab some boards, set some screens, and maybe make some layups, right? I mean, like, it's not, it's D1 basketball, so nothing's easy, but it seems to be like laid out pretty good for him to like fit into a consistent sort of contributing role for this team. And so far, like, I kind of like what you see. You brought him up on this podcast, like, it might have been the first pod we did, maybe it was the second one, but like, you're like, hey, watch out. I think fans are really going to like Tanner, how he plays, and he's going to make an impact. And so far, you're right, man. I agree. I like him. I'm watching him play. He's playing hard.
Right?
I like
he's
him.
Just, he does exactly what you want him to do. And this idea of, like, there's the core four and then the rest of the guys, but that's kind of an idea that I, once football is dead and gone, I'll probably try and explore a little bit more, because I think that there is this sense in the locker room of, like, there are these four guys and then there's the rest of us. And I don't think that that's something that, like, is an issue. Like, I don't think there's, like, a rift in the locker room by any means. But it's very clear that there's, like, these four dudes and no one else is just trying to help those four dudes. I kind of delved into it a little bit with Tanner. But, yeah, because I was like, you know, how have you grown over the last 6 months as a basketball player? And he's like, just figuring out my role and realizing, like, it's not high school anymore where, you know, he was in Gothenburg and they would just throw it inside and he would just score. that's not the game plan anymore. But I think that he's found a decent role, especially because Isaiah Roby doesn't really know how to defend without fouling yet. And he's always in foul trouble. And so Tanner is going to be the first one off the bench usually to get Roby off early. And kind of, it's also just interesting to me because he's this like big dude that doesn't really fit into what Miles is trying to do. But he also fits in perfectly because he's basically like shagging balls is essentially what his job is, like shagging balls and like kicking it back out. So, yeah, like, I like his game a lot, and he's a really nice kid, and he's a nice senior, you know, been there, done that type of guy for Tim. But I think that he's kind of probably the main example of, you know, adapt your game to what you need to play. I think there are a lot of guys in college basketball or college sports in general who are like, I'm either going to play the way that I played in high school or I'm leaving to go somewhere else where they'll let me do that. And Tanner just kind of accepted his role, which is kind of cool.
Nebraska, Missouri State today, and then Nebraska, either Texas Tech or USC tomorrow in Kansas City. It'll be a fun event. I'm sure there'll be a lot of Nebraska fans in the stands. Last year, Creighton was at that same tournament, the Hall of Fame Classic, and they filled up the lower bowl of the gym, probably, I don't know, 7,000 fans or so. And what was funny about it is Kansas City downtown was not ready for Blue Jay Nation because they came in and you know, most of the restaurants didn't have enough employees working. Some bars were closed and never opened. It was a Monday, Tuesday, just like the same setup this week for Nebraska. I would hope they learned their lesson, because I'm sure there's going to be a lot of red in the stadium and walking around downtown today and tomorrow. So, but regardless, in the arena, the atmosphere should be pretty pro Huskers, and I'm sure that they'll benefit from that. So that's a good thing. Because Creighton did.
I think there's it's not that hard. It's not that long of a drive from Omaha to Lincoln, like three and a half hours. And there's like a very subtle Nebraska contingent in Kansas City. Like I'm from Kansas City, and so I know kind of the alumni base, and it's not like overt, which is kind of weird. It's only 3 hours away, and like the university actually doesn't promote the school as much in Kansas City, which I think that they always should have. I only knew about the school because of like one professor. But I think that there'll be enough people down here to make it noticeable, because Nebraska fans are literally everywhere, and they'll show up for any event, especially if they have a chance to like go on a mini vacation before Thanksgiving. Yeah, so I think that'd be totally fine.
We'll talk about
Creighton. Do you want to talk about Ohio State Creighton real quick?
Yeah, I did. So Creighton's going to play. They played Ohio State, obviously, played them down to the wire, and Ohio State made the plays late in that game on Thursday to give Creighton its first loss, and the Jays are going to try to rebound in the Cayman Islands. They play the Cayman Islands Classic against, at least the first 2 days are against teams that are like decent mid-majors. You know, watch out if you don't play your A game, but teams that, if you are a Big East team thinking about contending and making the NCAA tournament, teams that you should beat. So we'll see how Creighton does. But I know you watched the Ohio State, or at least portions of the Ohio State Creighton games. What was your impression of that contest and how it sort of ebbed and flowed a little bit, and then obviously Ohio State made the plays at the end?
Yeah, for the most part, I thought Creighton stuck with them, because for a while I thought it was going to get kind of ugly for a little bit.
Like, yeah.
I thought Ohio State was going to kind of run away with it, but my main takeaway, to be quite honest, is like, I think Sean Alexander's dude. Like, I think that he might be the engine that carries Creighton this year. Because every time, I mean, I was watching it while I was running, and I felt like every time I looked up to kind of see what was going on, he was making a play, and I think he was in foul trouble for a while
in the first half. And that,
if I remember that right,
yeah. To support your point, I mean, Creighton was outscored 20-7 when he was out of the lineup in the first half with foul trouble, out for eight minutes.
Yeah, and so I think it was one of those things where, like, you know, they came back and made it a game, and it was a good game. I mean, it was probably pretty fun to actually see. I was curious what you thought of, like, you know, they still lost by 9, and they were kind of manhandled for a while, but they made it close, but then Ohio State made a run. Like, how do you assess that game? Because I think that's probably the first real test that Creighton had, and they kind of passed, but, like, kind of didn't. Like,
yeah.
How do you grade this?
Well, I had two things. It was, like, the short term was, like, okay, Creighton didn't get it done. It was in the moment, I guess you're encouraged by the fact that you competed with an Ohio State team that went to Cincinnati and won. Creighton, from a defensive standpoint, at least to start both halves, really executed what it wanted to do. It trapped Ohio State's point guard. It double-teamed the big man and really took those two guys who were the leading scorers coming into the game. They combined for like 30 points a game in Ohio State's first three games. They took them out, and they neutralized them. And so I think to be at the end of a game and have a chance to win, despite playing poorly early on, that's an encouraging sign. You just would like to have seen the Jays at home with momentum, with the lead late, by the way. They're up 4 with 3 minutes left, find a way to close it out, and they didn't. So I don't know if I'm going to rush the judgment and say, oh, this team can't close out games, because it did actually close out a game against ETSU just a few days before that, a different level of opponent, different caliber, obviously. But still, I think it's just something to monitor. Hey, what kind of team is this going to be at the end? But then the other thing was more of like the big picture takeaway for me was what's going on with the offense. I mean, I think Creighton found a groove in the second half, but that first half was really poor. I mean, well, really for the whole game, Creighton didn't shoot free throws well. I think it left 10 points at the rim. Like, there are 5 chances where the big man was open down low, and either they couldn't get the ball to him on, like, the whether, you know, they set ball screens, he rolls to the rim. Either the guards couldn't pass it to him, or the big man wasn't able to make a layup. There's one instance where I think one of the bigs gave up a layup and kicked it out for a three that was missed. So I charted as 10 points they gave away in the paint. That could have easily been for them. They gave away points at the free throw line, and they turned the ball over. They turned it over 11 times, and a few of those were illegal screens, charge calls, offensive foul type things, and some of them were just bad, bad decisions. So they got to find a flow offensively. I mean, they're still struggling. They're still struggling to establish their pace in games. If I looked at Ken Pom, he does like he sort of charts out like your length of possession. You know, like how long your possessions last. And Creighton's opponents are, I mean, their possessions are lasting as long as anyone in the country in terms of like a defense trying to how long Creighton plays defense. They play defense as long as anyone in the country. And so I don't have the specific number here or else I'd recite it. But I think that's something to note, too, is just the Jays haven't been able to establish their pace and find a rhythm offensively yet.
18.4.
Okay, there it
is. Which is 313th in the country.
Yeah. So.
It's bad.
That basically just means defenses are just holding the ball against them. They're doing everything they can, being very deliberate about making Creighton work defensively. And sucking sort of the pace out of the game and making sure that everything goes really slow. I think that to me, I'm going to be watching the offense this week. They're going to play Boise State, and then they'll play Georgia State or St. Bonaventure. And like I said, I mean, these are teams that if you want to make the NCAA tournament, you got to get these wins because, you know, it's not going to jump out when the selection committee is breaking down your resume. They're not going to be like, oh, well, you beat Georgia State, so obviously you're in. But I'd imagine there'll be quad two games, and that just helped. I mean, quad one, usually for me, a lot of times that probably determines the perception of what kind of team you are more than anything. But quad two matters too, and it's an opportunity for Creighton to sort of beef up the middle portion of its resume. And given the struggles of the Big East so far, that could be really imperative because there might be a situation if Creighton is able to find a way to compete for a pro season spot, like it may be competing against teams in its league that either underperformed in non-conference or didn't challenge themselves the way Creighton has or will. And so these games are important. But
the good point that you made last week that was apparent to me, and that, you know, as someone that hasn't watched a ton of Creighton, was the offense did look a little junk. Like it just didn't look like it wasn't that they looked lost, but it just didn't seem like it was flowing you would expect a Creighton offense to flow. You know what I mean?
Yep.
So I think that you're spot on that. So good job at being good at your job.
Hey, I watch basketball and can repeat what I see. No, I think that, and one of the things, too, that's impacting that is just the fact that Creighton has new pieces, new players getting new roles and trying to figure out how to work and play to each other's strengths. And they've had a couple of their big men, Martin Crompel and Jacob Epperson, miss practice at least leading up to the season. Last week, I think they both practiced for the most part fully. And so that's why I actually do think you'll see better offense from Creighton. I know it could be wrong, and you could be listening to this podcast on a Tuesday and pointing your finger and be like, do you watch basketball, John? Because I didn't see that. But no, I do think that there are signs that against Ohio State where it gave an indication that maybe Creighton's closer to figuring this out. Boise State is a team that has some athleticism, but it should be a team that Creighton can find a way to dissect. Now, there might be a possibility that Creighton's going to see some zone in the Cayman Islands, and I don't know what to even make of that. So Creighton at times has been okay against the zone, and times has really struggled. And given what we've seen from the offense, it's hard to make a prediction. They definitely worked on a lot of zone offense, but I don't know. That could throw a wrench in my prediction that you'll see better offense, but we'll see. Chris, let's finish out the pod real quick with a little thing we're going to call the layup drill. It's basically just us peppering each other with questions, touching on some national topics, it'll be quick and hopefully insightful, as insightful as it can be. We'll see. Let me hit you with this first question that I got here for you. Is Duke the greatest college basketball team ever or just the greatest team of the century?
Yeah, definitely this century. I mean, I can't think of anybody that is. I mean, I hate to be like, you know, again, November basketball, you can only take it so seriously. But, like, damn, dude, like, they look pretty good. Like, it's hard. Like, the lowest vote they got on AP poll this week was 3. Like, everyone is all in on Duke. Like, it's a complete, and like, there was a column from USA Today this week that was like, Zion Williamson shouldn't be playing college basketball because he's so good. And they have like all these, like, they're going to be really hard to beat. Like,
they are going to be hard to beat, but like, I feel like the hype's getting a little bit overboard. I mean, it.
Oh, for sure. Okay. For sure. They're a really good team. They're probably the best team in college basketball. I think they're way better than KU, and KU's number 2.
Yeah.
But at the same time, like, I think the Villanova team that won the championship last year is probably better than this one. You know, like
I'd
right
agree
now,
with that.
Like I'd probably take Villanova last year than this one.
Yeah.
So they're not like the greatest of all time,
but they kind of are the greatest of all time.
Right, but they also kind of, but like in the way that this college basketball year has set up, they're better than anyone I've seen by a wide margin.
What you got for me?
Let me hit you back. Worst loss for the Big East this year.
All right, so I calculated this out. Yeah, I calculated this out. So last week, the Big East team suffered losses by a margin of 19, 23, 23, 27, 9, 9, 8, 2, and 3. Aye.
Not good. That's not good.
If I was ranking the worst losses so far for the league, I'd probably put Villanova Furman at 1, Villanova Michigan at 2. Villanova has been the team that sort of carried the flag for this conference, and whenever somebody's asked about whether or not this league is legit or is the hype for real, you know, because a lot of people, they've gotten a lot of credibility, I feel like, over the last 5 years. The finger is always pointed to Villanova. Like, look at what they've done, 2 national titles in the last 3 years. Incredible winning percentage over that stretch, too. But I think of that moment in Black Panther when, you got... Killmonger.
Is this your king?
Yes. Yes. Is this your king? The rest of college basketball is looking at the Big East like, what you got? Because this is...
Man, I was driving back from the Nebraska football game with Tom Chattel, and Tom was like, Villanova lost to Furman. And I was like, no, that can't be right. And he's like, yeah, at home.
Yeah.
I was like, what? Yeah, they got issues, man. Which is weird, because like, I knew they'd like probably have some problems, but not this bad. That's pretty bad.
Is it better? Okay, here's my question for you. Is it better if you're a mid-major? Is it better to make a Final Four run like Loyola Chicago did last year? Obviously get a lot of hype and exposure because of that. Or is it better to get a road win in week 1 and vault into the top 25 poll like Buffalo did? So basically you get, is it better to be, to have sort of like, the 3 weeks of fame that Loyola got in the final, making that Final Four run, or maybe a full season's worth of praise that Buffalo could be getting, because now it's like 22, I think, in the AP poll, and if it keeps winning, obviously it'll stick there.
Yeah, they're not going anywhere. I lean toward Loyola Chicago just because, like, I think because of how broad the viewership is with March Madness, like everyone knows who Sister Jean is, like around the country.
Yeah,
like
that's a good
you
point.
Know Sister Jean, and so like people immediately, like you have that like brand recognition, if you want to call it that, if we wanted to get some like gross advertising words in here, and you can kind of build off of that. The counter argument though, which is a really good one, that I'm going against, is just like Buffalo's not going away, and they're gonna be around all year, and eventually we're going to have kind of a conversation, I think, in terms of like UCF in the college football playoff and like Buffalo of like beating, like
yeah,
how do
good
you
are
beat
they?
Buffalo? Like,
right.
are they like a 3 seed? Are they a 2 seed? Like, are they really deserve to be a 2 seed, even though they're like a really good mid-mate? Like that, you know what I mean? And so, they'll be around for a long time in, cause they're obviously like, they're going to win their conference. Like, it's not going to be a question, I don't think.
Yeah. You would think.
But I would probably pick the Final Four run because I think you get that just like Cinderella dust on you. Like, I remember the George Mason team. Like, I remember the VCU teams. Like, you remember those teams that actually make it that far. Whereas if you're just really good mid-major, I think you get lost a little bit.
Yeah.
Which you can kind of see with like Wichita State. Like, I don't know if they ever made a rule. They made
the Final Four.
Final Four one
yeah.
year. Is that
they were
year?
Like an 8 seed, and then the next year they were a 1 seed. So maybe that is Wichita State is the counter. Like, that's the answer. Would Wichita State fans rather go and have like a really awesome regular season where they make the tournament as a 1 and then lose in the second round, or would you rather make the Final Four? I think you probably make the Final Four, so that's probably it.
Right.
Buffalo, by the way, will play Syracuse and Marquette on the road in December. So it'll have an opportunity to either back up, you know, what it has done by beating West Virginia on the road, or come back down to earth.
Okay, John. Furman's Jordan Lyles. Have you seen the video of him breaking the D1 record, 15 threes in a game?
Saw it.
Because it's hilarious.
Yeah. That's a lot of threes.
How many shots? That's a lot. I mean, that's one of the things where, like, they were clearly trying to just, like, hey, where's Jordan? Okay, there he is. Yeah. Just do whatever you want. We're up by 20.
Yeah.
How many shots do you need to make 15 unguarded threes?
How many shots do I need?
But you get – so here's the caveat. You get, like, a 10-minute warm-up period.
Oh, yeah, the warm-up will be huge. That would be huge.
right.
I would say I feel like I could do 40. I think I could actually probably do 30. I think I could do 35, but I'm scared. You know, my basketball career ended in freshman year of high school. So I don't know if I can, you know, there must be some pressure.
So going 15 for 40 would mean that you're a 37% three-point shooter. That's above average.
Unguarded. That's not great, though.
I was going to go with like 45. And I played varsity basketball, and I was a three-point shooter. But that was a long time ago.
Yeah.
So I would probably say 40 to 45, I think. Which Jordan was like, what, 20, 25?
Yeah, I don't even remember what his line was.
The videos of those moments are awesome because it's like these like part-time radio announcers who are covering like Furman, and this is like the greatest moment of their life, and they're just like freaking out. That's what makes those videos so great.
Yeah. Well, that's probably all we got for you here. Like I said, it's a Monday, so if there's some questions that need to be answered at the end of this week, we'll probably have to wait till next week to get to them, because obviously Creighton's going to play 3 games in 3 days, and Nebraska's playing 2 in 2 days. So there's going to be a lot to kind of, figure out, right? So we'll end the podcast like we always do. If Nebraska and Creighton played today, who you got?
I am still taking Nebraska, but I think it might be a little closer than it was the week before. I feel like Creighton's going to learn a lot from that Ohio State loss.
Yeah, I'm with you. Quick fact check, because I can't remember if we said Lions or Lyles. I don't know what I said. I might have said Lyles. It's Jordan Lyles from Furman.
I think I said Lyles, too.
Okay, so that might have been. But, okay, Jordan Lyles, I'm watching the video right now. Hilarious.
It's incredible. Everyone needs to go watch it. It's amazing. Because, like, he's not, like, his shot doesn't look like he would make 15 threes in the game either. Like, he doesn't have this, like, perfect form, like, Thomas Allen looks like he could make 15 threes in a game, or like, you know, Tyshawn Alexander has a really good has a good form, but like this dude, it's like he just showed up at the YMCA and just kind of jacked them up. It's beautiful.
15 of 34. 15 of 34 is the line.
Lions, remember his name. Draft him in your fantasy league whenever
exactly.
You graduate.
Do it. Chris, thanks for the pod. Or thanks for being on the pod. We'll be back here next week.